We all dream of being giants or someone very special. It might have started with Superman comics and Batman. And if we couldn't be Batman, then certainly we could be his sidekick, Robin, a kind of a protege Batman in waiting. Or perhaps even Biggles. In my dreams, in the real ones, I could leap a house in a single stride, probably a whole street if I really tried. The world was my oyster, and there was nothing I couldn't achieve if I actually wanted to. This is how it tends to be for boys. I'm not quite sure how it is for girls, the nurturing ones. I doubt that Wonder Woman quite cuts it, actually. But maybe for some. For some of us who grew up in the church, the dream may have even been to be a bit like Jesus, but without the Calvary bit attached. How was it for you? Did you dream dreams as a child? Or as an adolescent, of what you might become? Perhaps you saw yourself as the image of a real person, a hero or a heroine, rather than a comic book one. Do you, can you, still dream dreams today? Dreams are a good thing. Without them, little in the world would actually be created. From dreaming, we set goals and begin something new. The problem is the way that we go about fulfilling these dreams. Too often, we use the shoulders of a less than willing victim to reach our new heights, or crush others in an uncaring pursuit of our personal goals. In the pre-Christian Vedic religion, its practitioners attempted to be gods by drinking a fermented hallucinogenic concoction called soma. For a time, its practitioners indeed felt like gods and perhaps acted like gods, but always ended up with a terrible hangover. Today, the equivalents of soma are perhaps some of our hard drugs, usually taken without the religious overtones, but with the same catastrophic results. Under the spell of such drugs, we can all have our dreams and much, much more beyond, yet with nothing ultimately to show for it other than a headache or much, much worse. More of soma later. For others of us, there are dreams that are shattered before they are even fully formed. Where the dream is of necessity limited to dealing with the pain that living has thrust upon us. A dream of the absence of pain, of just getting to the start line undamaged. We have products for this also. Mostly, they only dull the pain and still leave us less than whole people. Perhaps you have the impossible dream of starting again, being again a child like Alex or Maxie or Nancy, largely untouched by the corruptions of this world that surrounds us, still protected and nurtured. Let's build an image around Zacchaeus. It could be wrong, but most likely on the right path. We know that he was small of stature and a tax collector in the Jericho region. At the least, he had become a Jewish collaborator in the service of his Roman masters, and probably the very lowest form of collaborator. That is, one of those who do it entirely for personal gain, with no mitigating motive. Zacchaeus would have been wealthy, and it would have shown in the way he dressed. It would have shown in the look of his home, even his designer thongs. He had wealth and the status that wealth brings. The problem is that how much wealth Zacchaeus had depended on how far he was prepared to rip off his fellow countrymen and women. The Romans didn't really care how far he ripped those Jews off, as long as he delivered the taxes they demanded. And so he could do just that, and more, under the protection of the Roman garrison. So Zacchaeus had the respect that wealth brought, but lived with the opprobrium that extortion and collaboration endow. A fine Faustian pact. He had everything, and yet perhaps he had nothing. The Roman Satan had taken Zacchaeus up on top of a hill overlooking Jericho. Are there any hills overlooking Jericho? And said, "All this can be yours if you will serve me." And Zacchaeus said to the Roman Satan, "Yes, please." And so it came to be. When I went to the football, to watch Essendon, of course, standing in the outer at Windy Hill, my kids couldn't see. So they would push their way down to the front. Other supporters would let them through and even compromise their own space just a little bit so that everyone, including the kids, even the opposition kids, could see. No such accommodation for Zacchaeus, however. For a collaborator and an extortionist, there was no place in the crowd. And so he climbed a tree, the only location from which he could see Jesus. If you see nothing of yourself in Zacchaeus, have you never wanted to improve yourself at the expense of someone else? You can do it by an action. I'll support the most corrupt government we have known as long as I get what I want. You can do it by a word. You know that girl? Do you know that she? Of course, I wouldn't do something like that. You can do it by staying silent. I would have said something, but I've got a family and a position to protect. When the Satan takes you to the top of the hill and says, "All this can be yours," are you not just a little bit tempted? Surely a little bit of collaboration can't do much harm. So we support corrupt structures because those structures support us. At an international level, we support the governments of corrupt dictators by turning a blind eye to their failings, because those despots lend support to our military political ambitions. It's the way things are done, and we stay silent. So, like Zacchaeus, you may also climb a tree in order to see Jesus. Zacchaeus knew who he was. Do you? The tree offers a certain degree of safety. From its vantage point, you can see Jesus without actually being part of the Jesus crowd. The tree also offers more than one form of safety. It's the security of non-involvement, and perhaps even a certain degree of camouflage. And then Jesus looks up into the tree. I only wanted to see Jesus. I didn't want to know him. And when you are seen, you are known. When Jesus looked up, I am undone. John Greenleaf Whittier was an American Quaker idealist. Born in 1807, he became in his early 20s editor of a couple of thought-provoking magazines and dreamed of becoming a Southern congressman. His problem was that his Quaker upbringing led him to a deep-rooted belief in the equality of all people. The abolition of slavery was the logical extension of that belief. And no abolitionist could possibly be elected to Congress in the 1830s. His choice was between the principles of his belief and the expediency of compromise. So he wrote a few anti-slavery articles and poems under a pseudonym in order to protect his political ambitions, but then came to see that compromise as a futile act, and so devoted his next 30 years to the cause of the abolition of slavery. He became America's most effective anti-slavery advocate and penned the words of the hymn, "O brother man, fold to thy heart thy brother. Where pity dwells, the peace of God is there." A hymn that we sing mostly on Anzac Day. It's a tad ironic, it being the product of a pacifist Quaker. My reference to Whittier is, however, not primarily about his humanitarianism. It's his poem, The Brewing of Soma, penned around the theme of how God is to be known, and indeed some of the many ways that he is not to be known. You may not realise it, but many of you probably know the second half of this poem almost by heart. In fact, you may be shocked to discover that words that you know pretty well actually have been plucked from a piece of poetry. The Brewing of Soma by John Greenleaf Whittier. the faggots blazed. The cauldron smoke up through the green wood curled. Bring honey from the hollow oak. Bring milky sap, the brewers spoke, in the childhood of the world. And brewed they well or brewed they ill, the priests thrust in their rods, first tasted and then drank their fill, and shouted with one voice and will, "Behold the drink of gods!" They drank, and lo, in heart and brain, a new glad life began. The grey of hair grew young again. The sick man laughed away his pain. The cripple leaped and ran. Drink, mortals, what the gods have sent. Forget your long annoy. So sang the priests from tent to tent. The Soma's sacred madness went, a storm of drunken joy. Then knew each rapt inebriate a winged and glorious birth, soared upward with strange joy elate, beat with dazed head Varuna's gate, and sobered sank to earth. The land with Soma's praises rang on Gihon's banks of shade, its hymns like the dusky maiden sang, in joy of life or mortal pang, all men to Soma prayed. The morning twilight of the race sends down these matin psalms, and still with wondering eyes we trace the simple prayers to Soma's grace that Vedic verse embalms. As in that child world's early year, each after age has striven by music, incense, vigils drear, and trance to bring the skies more near or lift men up to heaven. Some fever of the blood and brain, some self-exalting spell, the scourge's keen delight of pain, the dervish dance, the Orphic strain, the wild-haired bacchant's yell, the desert's hair-grown hermits sunk, the saner brute below, the naked santon hashish drunk, the cloister madness of the monk, the fakir's torture show. And yet the past comes round again, and new doth old fulfil in sensual transports wild as vain. We brew in many a Christian fane, the heathen Soma still. Dear Lord and Father of mankind, forgive our foolish ways. Reclothe us in our rightful mind. In purer lives thy service find, in deeper reverence praise. In simple trust like theirs who heard beside the Syrian sea the gracious calling of the Lord, let us like them without a word rise up and follow thee. O Sabbath rest by Galilee, O calm of hills above, where Jesus knelt to share with thee the silence of eternity interpreted by love. With that deep hush subduing all, our words and works that drown the tender whisper of thy call, as noiseless let thy blessing fall as fell thy manna down. Drop thy still dews of quietness till all our strivings cease. Take from our souls the strain and stress, and let our ordered lives confess the beauty of thy peace. Breathe through the heats of our desire thy coolness and thy balm. Let sense be dumb, let flesh retire. Speak through the earthquake, wind and fire. O still, small voice of calm. For Whittier, God is not to be found in the extreme, nor through our exertions of religious success, or even in our elaborate expressions of piety. God is in the still, small voice when all else has failed. To know Jesus, Zacchaeus had to come down out of his tree and have his life reborn. From the safety of our tree, we can see Jesus. But to know Jesus is in the living of our lives, as Jesus, as with Zacchaeus, invites himself to dinner at our place. When Jesus invites us from our tree, he is not looking for a giant. He's looking for a small person, a damaged and a fragile person, even a shattered person, a collaborator or an extortioner, who is able to hear the still small voice and know that in God's view of the world and in the company of Jesus, we have become the giant and the special person we always dreamed of. Amen.